Waller versus Deutsche Bank, and so I guess we'll get started on that. Thank you. So Mr. Fisher, you've reserved 3 minutes for rebuttal.
That's correct.
So that gives you 7 minutes to start. Just give me 1 second.
Of course.
All right. Okay, you may proceed.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Matthew Fisher, and I represent the estates and families of two journalists and an aid worker who were kidnapped, tortured, and murdered by ISIS operatives who were part of a terror fundraising venture. The complaint plausibly alleges that Deutsche Bank knowingly benefited from its participation in that venture and is liable as a beneficiary under 18 U.S.C. 1595A. The district court's contrary ruling must be reversed, and this case should proceed to discovery. Today, I'll focus on our seized bank allegations and explain why those easily state a claim. Context matters. In late 2013, ISIS had become one of the world's most notorious human traffickers. Now, to be sure, ISIS was, of course, a notoriously violent terrorist organization, but ISIS also used trafficking crimes to inflict terror. ISIS enslaved hundreds of men, women, and children. It tortured captives, sold many into sex slavery, and proudly advertised its crimes in glossy magazines and propaganda videos. Trafficking was an inextricable part of ISIS's terrorism. Then in June 2014, ISIS overran Mosul, Iraq's second largest city. There, and in subsequent cities that ISIS conquered, ISIS seized local bank branches. Those branches effectively became part of the Bank of ISIS. ISIS then tried to use those seized banks' correspondent accounts at foreign banks like Deutsche Bank to transact using US dollars, which ISIS sought to use so it could buy weapons, pay fighters, and sustain its trafficking crimes and terrorist operations. The US Treasury Department immediately sounded the alarm when this happened. The takeover of Mosul was a watershed moment. So the US government issued direct warnings to responsible Western banks about ISIS.
I think we understand all that. I guess the real issue is getting to the statute and figuring out whether the terms of the statute and the elements of the cause of action have been met here. And so maybe it's worthwhile focusing on the venture. I mean, because the way you're talking now, it sounds like the venture is ISIS. Doesn't it need to be more narrow than that?
Well, Your Honor, we define the venture as Al-Qaeda in Iraq, which became ISIS, is operating an integrated terror fundraising venture. The purpose of that venture was raising money for those terrorist groups to fund both their terrorist attacks and their trafficking crimes. The venture participants, as we've defined it, include the terrorist groups, the members who fundraised and seized Iraqi banks, and then corporate enablers like Deutsche Bank. And I believe Your Honor's concern might get to the potential breadth of the venture or the breadth of the statute. But we believe the meaningful guardrail in the statute really is the knowledge element, that there's a new or should have known standard for beneficiary liability.
So I think you have a stronger argument on knowledge, but what about participation? Doesn't the complaint allege simply routine? I know you don't like the word routine, but routine or ordinary financial transactions, and is that enough?
Your Honor,
for participation.
Your Honor, first, we don't believe the complaint alleges ordinary banking services. Correspondent banking is different than just having a savings account. This is a bank-to-bank relationship.
Every bank that's engaging in correspondent banking is participating in a venture with the clients, the customers who are doing those transactions.
Your Honor, we don't think that they're necessarily participating in a way that gives rise to liability. The participation
let's take it in stages. I'm just trying to figure out what is participation in a venture. And you seem to be suggesting that to the extent a bank is doing correspondent banking services, that is participation in a venture.
Your Honor, that could be participation in a venture under the plain terms of the statute.
It could be. I guess I'm trying to figure out why, when would it be and when would it not be?
Well, in the context of the complaint, we say that's certainly participation. We allege participation. It's a very broad term, and Congress was intentional in its use of broad terms in this statute. Congress recognized that trafficking ventures depend on both the on-the-ground perpetrators and those corporate enablers like Deutsche
Bank. Can I ask you about breadth? I was thinking if the text were participation with a venture versus participation in a venture, would participation with a venture be broader than participation in a venture?
Participation with a venture may be broader, but I think in both contexts, when you look at the allegations in the complaint, Deutsche Bank is participating in and with. It performed thousands of these correspondent transactions for what was essentially the Bank of ISIS. And Deutsche Bank's decision to do that at a time when responsible Western institutions were listening to the Treasury Department.
You're conflating sort of knowledge. In other words, because their knowledge is bad, then their participation is enhanced. And I'm not sure why that would be the case. They're separate elements, right?
Well, Your Honor, they are separate elements, but participation devoid of any context, really,
it's not devoid of context. It's just, I guess, what is it about correspondent banking that makes you a participant in the venture of the entity that is requesting the bank to do the correspondent banking? I want dollars turned into dinars or vice versa.
Well, Your Honor, that is active participation. If venture
participation in a venture. So if somebody in Switzerland is going to, wants dollars so they can purchase property, the bank is participating in that venture when they help do a dollar-denominated transaction or transfer.
Yes, Your Honor. Under the plain language of the statute, that would be participation. And the reason that we're conflating knowledge and participation is because participation should be viewed in context. Whether something is culpable depends on the circumstances. A locksmith helping someone get into their home after they've been locked out is very different than a locksmith trying to help a burglar get into that person's home to burglarize.
Participation in the venture turns on the knowledge of the purpose of the venture.
Well, we think that could be a very meaningful limit on this statute, and that the idea that all banks are suddenly liable is limited by what the banks knew or should have known. The knowledge element is a real, meaningful guardrail.
But it's a separate element, and it seems to me that you're sort of conflating them.
Knowledge by itself would not be enough, right?
Correct, Your Honor. Knowledge by itself will not be enough. Bank still had to do something.
Whether a locksmith is participating in a venture turns in part on what the locksmith knows about the purpose of the services.
Yes, Your Honor. Or at least the culpability and the evaluation of whether that participation is problematic and blameworthy is not something that should be decided as a matter of law at the pleading stage, which is what happened here. A jury could evaluate culpability. A jury could evaluate the blameworthiness of what Deutsche Bank did. But that was not allowed to happen. The district court cut this lawsuit out at the jump, and we think it should at least go to discovery.
So, does a bank, basically giving a loan to somebody, that participating in a venture? If I'm going to buy a car, I go to my bank, I say I need a loan. They give me the loan, I pay interest on it. They're participating in my venture to buy a car?
Well, Your Honor, it doesn't seem that there would be a venture in that circumstance. I think that's one activity you're not working.
I'm going to buy a company. I'm going to start a coffee company, selling.
Yes.
And so the bank gives me a loan, and they're participating in my venture.
Yes, the bank would be participating.
And a law firm that gives me advice on contracting, that's also participating in the venture.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. How about selling food to ISIS-controlled areas at the time? Generally selling in the area, selling grain, for example. Would that be participation in a venture?
Your Honor, selling grain broadly to the region likely is not connected to the ISIS venture itself. It's probably going to a lot of people who are not connected with ISIS. The grain merchant probably has no reason to know should have known.
Well, so just on the first point, if Deutsche Bank is transacting via correspondent bank with some ISIS-controlled banks and some non-ISIS-controlled banks, does that mean they're not participating in a venture?
Well, I think the transactions with non-ISIS-controlled banks would not be problematic. But here, we only allege that Deutsche Bank...
Back to the hypo then. If you're selling grain into an area controlled by ISIS, some of which is bought by ISIS and then used to maintain hostages or to feed ISIS soldiers or whatever. Are you participating in the venture?
In the scenario you've described, it does not seem like there would be adequate knowledge of the grain merchant.
So if you know that the area is controlled by ISIS and that hostages are being moved in and out of that area, for example.
Well, and if you're selling that grain directly to ISIS terrorists, or if you're selling weapons, or if you're selling any other good that ISIS could use to advance its trafficking crimes, I do think that would give rise to liability. It's a question of who you're working with, who you're selling to. Here, Deutsche Bank was working with essentially the bank of ISIS. And that is very direct. There's not an intermediary there.
Okay. I just want to get back to venture. I mean, the 11th Circuit, other circuits dealing with this weird question have looked to dictionaries because the statute doesn't define the term. And have sort of settled on, you know, venture requiring some degree of risk or some degree of sharing in the risk and the profits. And I guess that seems hard to square with what you're suggesting is that lawyers and loan officers are all participating in a venture, even when they're not taking on any risk and they're not sharing any profits. They don't have equity or anything like that.
Your Honor, they are sharing in profits. Deutsche Bank received fees and commissions from the banking services
that
are provided.
They're not getting a percentage of the profits. I mean, my coffee company example, the bank is not going to make more money because I hit big. They're going to get the regular negotiated rate of interest.
But capping it to, you know, that understanding where if Deutsche Bank had negotiated a different arrangement.
Venture, we didn't make it up. I mean, it seems to me that you're sort of suggesting venture just means material support. Would you say material support is more demanding or less demanding than participating in a venture?
Material support seems like it may be more demanding than participation, but... Also, Your Honor, I think this court can also just look to the broad definition of venture that that Congress established in 1591E6, which is just a group of two or more individuals associated, in fact, whether or not a legal entity. This gloss of risk is something that certain courts have imposed, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's the ordinary meaning or a meaning that's consistent with Congress's intention or the language of the statute.
All right. Well, you've got 3 minutes for rebuttal, so we will now hear from Mr. Januszewski. Pronouncing that right?
You did, Your Honor. Thank you. May it please the court, I'm David Januszewski from Cahill, Gordon, and Rendell, representing Deutsche Bank. As we set forth in our brief, Your Honor, there's several grounds that we assert for affirmance here. I'll focus on participation in the venture since the discussion's been about that.
Well, do you think that's the strongest one or no?
I think they're all strong. I think that is probably...
Well, if you had to pick one.
That would be my favorite child.
Okay.
As you know, there's also the knowledge issue and some other grounds that we asserted that Judge Cote did not need to reach, which we all set forth in the brief. But with respect to participation in a venture... I'll go back to where my friend on the other side just left off in terms of the dictionary definition that your sister circuits in D.C.
Your friend was suggesting, I think, that the extent of participation required may change if there is knowledge. What do you think of that?
I think knowledge is relevant to assessing participation, but the point
it's
that
it's a separate element, but
right. Right, but there is an overlap, I think, in the decisions applying them, although they are separate. But what I think that, well, first of all, on the definition, he goes back to the 1591 definition, which is just an association in fact. We would point, as Judge Cote did, to the Apple case in the D.C. Circuit. And
yeah, most courts seem to have been skeptical of that interpretation.
Yeah. And both because 1591 says the definition therein is for that section only, but also the word venture, it's in the dictionary as including risk, potential gain.
It also came afterwards, didn't it?
That's right. That's right.
Which would be strange for the earlier provision to be referencing something not yet passed.
That's right.
Look, I'm inclined to treat them as separate elements. I get that. But it does seem to me if risk is a component of venture, then knowledge of the illegal nature of something does sort of put you in the risk category. In other words, I'm just a loan officer at a bank, then I'm not participating in a venture. If I'm lending money knowing that this is going to violate law, then maybe I'm in a venture because I've assumed some of the risk. And I guess that's what I was trying to tease out with Mr. Fisher. Is there some component of knowledge that informs whether or not this is a venture that involves risk?
I think knowledge is, as I said to Judge Chin, it's relevant, but they are separate elements. And participation in a venture requires more than just knowledge of the venture or its aspects. And I think what my friend didn't, I think he mentioned culpability, but I think that what the cases show, and you know, we can have a back and forth about how relevant Twitter is and this court's decision in the Ashley Wildman case that Judge Nathan was on. But clearly—
So you say it has to be non-routine activity.
It has, well, what I say that also, but what I was going to say about that was it requires some aspect of wanting the venture to succeed. To be participating in the venture is not just knowing that it's out there like Judge Sullivan's coffee company.
Well, I don't know. The bank wants it to succeed. I mean, there's no question.
Well, they want
it to succeed.
They want their loan paid back, but I don't think that's the same thing as what, well, Seventh Circuit in the Salesforce case, which they rely on, says ordinary understanding of culpable assistance to a wrongdoer requires a desire to promote the wrongful venture's success. And there's no allegation anything close to that, nor could there be.
And you get that textually from participation?
Participation in the venture. Correct.
So the whole phrase together,
I think so,
implies
right
some kind of desire to see the object of the venture succeed.
Right. But I would also, again, I know they say Twitter is a different statute, the anti-terrorism statute, which these my friends over here asserted in the Wildman case, and this court rejected. But Twitter was clear that exactly that, some form of wanting the venture to succeed is required in that context. Supreme Court, as Your Honor, the Ashley panel said, in the Smith and Wesson case, which is a different, wasn't an ATA case, different statute, did the same thing. There was a case argued last week in the Supreme Court in copyright, dealing with secondary liability and copyright. The argument was all about Twitter. And what are the limitations on secondary liability? And I think what Justice Thomas said in Twitter and Judge Wesley in Ashley said is that some aspect of wanting the venture to succeed is required to constitute participation. They don't allege anything like that. They don't allege any knowledge of the trafficking.
Don't you think this is meant to be a lower standard than the ATA, easier to meet?
It's different in some ways, but I really do think that if the issue goes to the Supreme Court, I think they will look at Twitter as relevant to cabining secondary liability. Twitter said it can't be this because then every bank will be liable for everything along the lines of what Judge Sullivan was saying earlier. Just because they make a loan doesn't make them on the hook, or selling grain in a country that perhaps has terrorists in it. It just can't be enough. You have to want the venture to succeed, and I think that would be applied in the context of this statute. Similarly, the D.C. Circuit in the Apple case, where it was a chain of a supply chain of selling cobalt from the Congo. Again, the D.C. Circuit said, It's not enough that you're just doing business with the suppliers. That's an arm's length commercial arrangement, and that's not wanting it.
So this is it's a different point than the non-routine focus. The non-routineness would allow an inference of wanting the venture to succeed.
But let me just, if I may, address the non-routine thing, because they make a big deal out of that, or they emphasize that in their brief, and they say that Judge Cope created a safe harbor. And I respectfully think that's just a word game. She didn't create a safe harbor. She looked at the allegations of the complaint in the context of a 12B6 motion and said, all you allege is routine banking services. And that's what was done in Twitter, was a 12B6 motion. Ashley was a 12B6 motion. And in both, in Twitter, the court focused on the fact that these are routine services provided by Twitter and Google and those services that they supply to all their customers, even though they knew ISIS was using it in Twitter. Similarly, in Ashley, as you may recall, Your Honor, there were specific, we were in that case, but there were allegations against Standard Chartered where Judge Wesley specifically said, these are routine banking services, you don't allege anything more. And that wasn't a safe harbor, it was just a failure to allege the required elements of the claim. So if you want to say there's a safe harbor for deficient allegations in a complaint, fine, but that's not breaking new law or new ground, as they suggest Judge Cote was trying to do. And if I can just touch briefly on some of the specifics, you know, they focus quite a bit on the VAT fraud, which exactly the same allegations were made across the river in the Eastern District, and then this court, I mean, literally the same allegations concerning Mr. Aziz and Mr. Ahmed, and you know, the fact that they operated in certain countries, that they were young, that they were dealing in cell phones. All that was alleged with respect to Deutsche Bank is that they were customers of the bank, that the bank was, you know, documenting transfers, making bank transfers. And as this court properly recognized in the ATA context, those allegations were just too general. And you can't allege that a whole country is out of bounds is what they were trying to do in that case. There's no specific, to emphasize, there's no allegation that Deutsche Bank knew about the trafficking, had any connection to any trafficker, had any connection to ISIS. The connection was with these two guys, one of whom was arrested, I think, in 2010 before the abduction, which this court noted in Ashley. So there's nothing to tie Deutsche Bank to the trafficking in any way, a venture of trafficking, which is was required.
Can I just ask, just to go back to the primary point, the wanting to succeed gloss, just textually walk me through how you get there.
Well, the text is pretty brief. It's participating in the venture, and I think it's the gloss that again your sister circuits have applied to it. If you are participating affirmatively,
so participating means to take part in or I forget the other dictionary word, but just taking part in doesn't participate itself doesn't suggest to me a desire to see something succeed.
It's combined with the venture itself, and that's how the
court... So something about venture?
Right. Well, the specific language that Judge Cote used, which came from the D.C. Circuit in Apple and the 11th Circuit in Red Roofs, taking part or sharing in an enterprise or undertaking that involves danger, uncertainty, or risk, and potential gain. So it's the aspect of including the risk and the potential for gain, which I think comes from venture, and venture capital. Venture has that. It's more than just some activity. It includes
knowingly participate in a venture, right?
Yeah.
Does knowingly make a difference?
I think it does. I think if you know, again, there's no allegation here. I feel compelled to say again, in this case, there's no allegation that Deutsche Bank had any knowledge of the trafficking, and we would say of these particular plaintiffs. And that certainly puts a gloss on wanting it to succeed. You have to know about it and understand it and know what the venture is up to, I think.
Well, I was actually, my question was actually supporting your position, I think.
Yeah.
By knowingly participate in a venture that does imply, it arguably imply, you know, some desire to see the venture
right.
do well. You're not just participating, you're knowingly participating
right.
in the venture.
No, I took your question that way, and I think that's yes. correct.
Okay.
I'm not sure this even matters, but I keep coming back to what is this a harder or a easier test to meet than material support? To provide material support, is that how does that differ from participating in a venture?
I think participating in a venture, as we've been discussing, includes more. Because of the issues we've just...
In other words, ordinary banking services could be material support.
I think if Deutsche Bank gives a loan to Your Honor for the coffee company, I could see there's an argument that that's material support if you know, you need those funds to launch your business. I think it's a lower standard than participating in a venture.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you,
Your
Honor.
We'll now hear from Mr. Fisher for 3 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Beneficiary liability is an easier test to meet than perpetrator liability. 1595A envisions accountability for both perpetrators of on-the-ground trafficking crimes and beneficiaries, those corporate enablers who knowingly participate in the venture, despite knowing that
right.
the venture...
No, I don't think anybody would disagree with that.
Correct. And in that light, that the intent can be inferred, the intent to have the venture succeed, which they like talking about, one, there's not an explicit intent element in the statute. Second, you can infer intent from actions. Here, unlike responsible financial institutions that severed correspondent banking relationships, Deutsche Bank stayed in. It kept performing those transactions for seized banks because Deutsche Bank could make fees and commissions. Deutsche Bank saw a profit opportunity. And the question of whether those are ordinary financial services should be considered in light of the knowledge that Deutsche Bank had while it was performing those transactions. We know that even Deutsche Bank employees were flagging these transactions as suspicious. They filed SARs reporting nearly 5,000 transactions totaling about $3 billion. This is not a situation where...
So if somebody rented a car to ISIS, your view is that would cover this?
It depends.
As long as they had knowledge, it would be covered?
If they knew
that would
they
be
were
participating in the venture.
Yes, Your Honor. If they knew they were renting a car to a horrific ISIS trafficker who was likely going to commit trafficking crimes, which all U.S. government warnings were crystal clear about at the time, that would be participation in the venture. That a bank should not be a bank, car rental company, merchants.
So, I mean, I guess I didn't say a car that's going to be used to traffic victims. I'm just saying renting a car to ISIS. I mean, because I also think you're pitching this at a very general level. You're saying any banking services to ISIS makes you on the hook for everything ISIS does. Is that right?
We think it's at the very least, if you're participating in a venture with ISIS, in your hypothetical, if you're renting a car to an ISIS terrorist, with all of the warnings in the world that ISIS uses material support given to it to do things like commit trafficking crimes, you can be on the hook as enabling or supporting that venture. At the very least, you are participating in that venture. The statute does not have a nexus
so
requirement or
I,
a cause.
If I own a restaurant and ISIS people come in to eat and I serve them, again, participating in the venture.
That would probably be an edge case because you would imagine that the restaurant owner might say that I wasn't culpable, this was a one-off time interaction or whatever it might be. You're right, but that's not what we have here. We do not have an edge case. This does not need to be the case where the court defines the outer bounds of liability under the TVPRA. This is a very clear case of a corporate enabler of ISIS's trafficking.
Why wouldn't a single bank transaction with all the other facts held the same?
I think
meet your definition.
Yeah, I think the Seventh Circuit and the D.C. Circuit essentially have punted on that question, that a one-off interaction, a one-time sale.
I'm asking you, your view, as you understand the meaning of the statute. Your response to Judge Sullivan was, well, it's one-off, so it might not be. I'm just asking why that would matter from the way in which you interpret the statute.
Yeah, I think the ordinary meaning of participation implies something more than a one-off. I don't think someone wins a participation trophy if they never show up for their soccer team or if they show up one time. I think it's more than that. And that's just the ordinary standard usage of the term participation. I think it excludes those sort of one-off cases.
All right. Well, thank you both. It's obviously an interesting and important case. We're going to reserve decision, but thanks for the argument.
Thank you.